Been a little while since we checked in with State Representative Tacky Chan of the 2nd Norfolk District here in Quincy. So, Tacky, nice to see you.
Good to see you, Joe. It's Friday today, the 15th?
14th of August now. 14th. Yeah, we're halfway through.
Still can't tell my dates. last time we talked, yeah, I know, it's still bad. No, last time we talked was what, the Monday prior?
Right.
So it's been about almost 10 days.
Yes. What has happened at the State House significantly since that time? And boy, is that a loaded question.
I know. It's been quieter. I mean, once we closed session and we recessed for the August, it has significantly less activity. And honestly, I'm grateful for a bit of a break here. Because it's been running very hot and heavy all year long from the late spring. We had a little break when coronavirus hit at the onset because, frankly, nobody knew what we're doing. We're no different from anyone else at the onset. So it was a period of time where just nothing was going on as we try to sort out how to do our jobs and everything else. Then after the first couple of weeks, things got very, very busy. Once we figure out how to use video conferencing like we're doing here, as well as acquiring documents from the office and, setting up the telephone conference calls and obviously set up formal sessions by teleconference. So once we figured out how to start doing some stuff like everyone else, things were very busy from the late spring throughout the summer. And we closed the session on July 31st for recess in August, but we suspended the rules to extend the session for the remainder of this year. Essentially what subject called the chair in both branches. But we've been informed on August will be a recess month for us, a real recess month. So rather than the informal sessions running every 72 hours, we do expect formal sessions to start again after September 1st.
Sure. How's life in your district here in Quincy? Have you been able to get out and talk to folks or at least video chat with them to see how they're doing so far?
I've been getting a lot of texts from my friends in the area. I mean, we have friends in every neighborhood. It's not surprising. So I get updated what's going on in their families and what their neighbors are saying a bit, but communication continues to be different. Even if you hold web-based forums, like the Montclair Neighborhood Association did one. I think I was on that one in June, I believe. Even then, you can only get so much of an audience anyway, and it's hard to communicate because you don't have time. It's not like you control a room easily. And it takes longer to converse on video conference. You can't really signal when it's time to stop easily, as well as trying to figure out when is the right moment to get a word in edgewise because you have no body language to work off of.
Right, yeah.
You kind of figure out when someone's done based on body language, believe it or not. So you kind of figure out when this part of the conversation is going to move to another area. So it is hard, but mostly it's a lot of friends and in the area just keeping me updated what they see and what they hear.
Yeah. What are you hearing from some of the businesses, how they're coping right now?
They're challenged. I mean, my friends in the travel agencies, they totally don't know what to do. They have to be here. For example, Sunshine Travel is now doing grocery deliveries for KMN Marketplace. So if you want to order your Asian groceries from KMN, Chinese, Vietnamese, Thai, they have a lot of variety. But Sunshine Travel is going to be a delivery agent for them. Other businesses, unfortunately, have closed up. Various barber shops, tailors, specialty shops have unfortunately unable to withstand a pandemic. Even Quincy Tickets, that's on Wallston and Hancock Street, has shuttered. And they put paper up in the windows, which is generally a bad sign that you're not coming back. So there's some that are trying to get along. You know, my dry cleaner is trying to adjust. They are a tailor. They're not a high-end suit maker. But people are still getting their clothes hemmed, let out some waistlines I've been hearing, and their pants.
Yes.
So people are looking for affordable ways to make things last a little longer right now, given the economic situation. So there's some business for some tailors. The restaurants You know, I haven't heard too much from any of them, to be honest with you. Locally, I've been observing what I see on my drive-throughs. Right now, most of them seems to be trying to figure out how to make this work, but the summer will come into an end, and once we get into mid-late October, the weather's just quick, and we'll see where we are on the situation with coronavirus. We'll get to the cooler months, as well as outdoor dining will slowly but steadily come to a close. And we'll see where we are then. But I think most people do the best to make their business work. But I mean, there's an added cost of PPE, added cost of cleaning, and really the people coming in, and only so much manpower to do things like delivery and scheduling curbside pickup. So no one wants to hurt anybody. So it's trying to make sure everybody's safe while they're conducting business.
Yeah. What do you think about the governor's move to lower the outside gathering numbers from 100 down to 50?
And I'm not surprised by that move. We are still upticking a little bit here. The 70 average as of yesterday was about 1.5%, which is very, very good at this point. But the number of total new infections is over 300. But hospital rates are down, and ICU is down significantly from the beginning, I mean, very significant. So the concern is very simple. We're still seeing triple-digit infection rates every single day, despite the seven-day average continuing to be slowing down gradually, getting smaller. And we do know, again, this is a disease that is asymptomatic. You don't have to show any symptoms to be a carrier and a transmitter. And people really need to behave. This disease does not go away because we pass a law. This disease does not go away because we wish it away. Disease only goes away if we ourselves make the effort to do what we need to do, keep each other safe, make it go away. And it's going to be inconvenience for all of us to do that. But your choice is that you could become ill, or you could submit someone you love to become ill. And the risk of death is still out there. And it is worse than the flu at this point in terms of death. So that myth is now truly a myth that even I was using, because that was what I was told by the CDC too at the very onset. Mm-hmm. So this is not the flu, people. And speaking of which, get your flu shot. Flu shots are available right now this month. You can call your doctor's office, go to CVS, MinuteClinics, Target. I mean, anywhere they offer a flu shot, they will take your insurance. So please get your flu shot, because you do not want a situation where you get the flu symptoms and you think it's COVID-19. Well, you have COVID-19, you have the flu, or even the worst case, you have the flu and COVID-19, yeah. Which, by the way, can happen. The two different diseases. You can get both. You don't want to have both.
Yeah.
So that is a beyond dire situation, regardless of your physical health. You get both at the same time.
Absolutely.
So you know, flu shots are available now.
One of the big struggles going on, as you're well aware right now, Jackie, is how do we get kids back to school next month? You know, here in Quincy, they voted for kind of a hybrid model. Some communities are doing full remote. Some are going back in schools full time. What is your sense for how things should look here in Quincy?
Well, I think the example is the high school graduations, right? A lot of folks have been doing it either virtual. We do it in person, but there's risk associated with joining, and every school district is trying to assess the risk associated with each graduation. In Quincy, unfortunately, a parent did not know or did not pay attention to their physical health and created quite a scare under their attendance. As a result, Framingham, for example, this week had no teachers, no parents, no guests other than the students and immediate faculty to handle diplomas, which is not obviously a family celebration. But this is, again, the risk tolerance. And I think one of the major lessons here is that we do not want to flip back and forth. So obviously when we had hit COVID-19 and we essentially slowed things down significantly in terms of everything and keeping people indoors, the importance of education moved to online and had to be done quickly with no plan in place. They had to figure it out as they go, teachers, administrators, everyone. Well, now they have time to plan, but we don't know what the future looks like. and this fear of a second wave, which is not an illegitimate fear. In fact, its infection numbers have not gone away, puts these school districts in a very precarious position where they don't want to open up the schools, then have to go back to remote learning right away, as families already plan for their children to be in school. Same thing with hybrid learning. You're already planning your kids to be in school on certain days, and then you have to flip back to remote. And even if you do plan remote, that puts a lot of stress on the families too. There is absolutely no good situation in my mind. It's just hard on everybody, especially on families. It's very much on families as they try to plan their day jobs and their kids and keep everyone safe. One of my concerns as well is the fact that children are asymptomatic. As I said earlier, this disease does not require symptoms. And children sometimes carry a slight higher temperature, very small higher temperature, but it does not mean they have COVID-19. They're just running hot that day. But at the same time, though, they could have no symptoms, come home and give it to you as a parent, and you could potentially give it to your grandparents and your co-workers. So this is kind of the warning you see from some other doctors about school openings. It's not about safety in the school itself, it's the safety of the community. If the community has a very low infection rate or very much no infection rate, then the logic is that the kids also will have low or no infection rate, which means they bring back low or nothing back to your home. And those who do have children or been in workplace with children, my joke is always that I don't have kids. So as a result, I have absolutely no immunity to whatever kids give me for diseases. So when I visit a school or I have co-workers come in sick when they had kids when I was in law school at night, my colleagues in law school would have illnesses because they have kids at home. And next thing you know, I'm sick with the kid flu. I mean, this is something I think everyone's experienced if you have children or work in an office with people with children. And COVID-19 is no different from that scenario. And your kids may be fine. And the difference is their kids may be fine and they look fine, but they're carriers. That's the big difference here.
Yep. I know there is a proposal to eliminate or at least suspend the MCAS exams. Do you think that's something that could happen?
MCAS is a bit of a tricky issue these days because a lot of it can be tied to federal money.
Yeah.
The federal education money and standards testing have been pushed together over the years because under No Child Leave Behind, which is a very old statement now from back in the, I think, George H. Bush era. I think this is how long No Kid Left Behind is. Standard testing was something that the Fed's been pushing out over the course of decades, and the state has already moved ahead with MCAS back in the early 1990s and education reform back then. People know I'm not a big fan of standardized testing. I think standardized testing takes away flexibility in the classroom and basically forces people to learn strictly from textbook and pushes aside other viable educational opportunities in favor of higher test scores, which makes the community look good, but necessarily brings a well-rounded education. That being said, I'm not talking about MCAS reform. It's really about suspending MCAS.
And right.
Probably is going to need to happen at some level because it's going to be very difficult, especially folks who do not have English as a first language, or people with learning challenges. Whether it be physical or mental issues or just need extra time, whatever the case may be, will be at a significant disadvantage on taking the MCAS. And as an immigrant city where I'm going to tell you the census is going to show that probably 35% plus of the people in the city do not speak English as a first language, many of them are going to be children in our school system, the MCAS, the standardized test, works against them.
Mm-hmm.
And it's becoming more important for them to do that. With hybrid learning or even online learning, that will continue to work at a disadvantage.
Yeah. The governor recently said that he fully intends to fund the Student Opportunity Act, which means an additional about $6 million here in Quincy. But where's that money coming from, Jackie?
I don't know.
Okay.
It's great to have intentions. Yeah. I have great intentions too. Last time I checked, I have a lot of good intentions. But where the money's going to come from, I don't know. I don't know where he's getting his ideas for money that doesn't exist. we could do this through deficit spending, which would be basically submitting a bond, taking a loan out. But legislature doesn't like to do that. It has an adverse effect on our bond rating, and it crimps our ability to do other capital projects if we start bonding operational costs. And it's not a good win for us, because operational cost-wise, you have to pay the interest on top of the base cost. So if you do $100 million on, for example, for schools, direct aid to cities and towns, and you bond that $100 million, that's $100 million plus interest over X number of years. So even though the interest rates are really low right now, do we really want to tie up money that way, which that same money could be used for bridge improvement, city improvement, bridge improvements, street improvements, highway improvements, you know, all kinds of other capital projects which we do bond money for. He's also hoping, or hoping, the federal government comes to some conclusion of whether or not it can provide some assistance to cities and towns. You know, I had a little chat with Liz Warren about it, you know, the good senator, and you know, asked her about this stuff, and she indicates that there's still a bit of a deadlock. Down in D.C., we've heard various diverse opinions by senators and congressmen about how to handle city and state budgets, in particular, particularly big cities and states, and how they're going to manage that. So that debate continues to be moving in D.C. with every senator and congressman with a different opinion about how to handle the matter. I don't see a very quick solution this month from the federal government.
Yeah. The state's operating month by month, isn't it?
Yeah, we passed a three-month budget in end of July. So we're already passed a one-month budget for August. We have a three-month budget to November. And these are not food budgets. These are numbers based on last year's numbers. Mm-hmm. So using the fiscal year 20 budget figures for those months, minus things that were one-time costs. So, for example, our earmarks for cities and towns for local programs that are generally considered one-time cost, because earmarking is not a guarantee it's going to be next year. But there are no earmarks, for example, in these 112 and now one-fourth budgets that we put out. We took out things that are we know are not going to be spent on. For example, there's no snow removal money in the month of August.
Right.
So we didn't have to add it. I mean, it's, you know, some people don't think it's that obvious, but it really is. So these budgets are not truly the exact same number of the prior year, because those numbers are baked in on a 1-12 basis for the whole cycle. We're literally just taking what we actually need to spend minus the one-time expenditures, minus the things we know will not be used that month anyway, and trying to make it run. So we aren't spending as much money as we did, but we're also not fully funding everything.
Right. It seems like the real impact will be in 2022, because that's kind of when the rubber hits the road, right?
Well, 2021, yes, because of the absolutely 2021 and 2022. It's two issues. One is on the state budget. If we do not get federal assistance, we're going to have to make, you know, potentially $6 billion in cuts, but we still don't know what it looks like, because we haven't received our revenue for FY 20. One's budget, right? 2020, FY20's budget, last cycle. So FY20 budget last cycle, the taxes weren't collected in July. Not everybody paid their taxes in July, big surprise. And a lot of folks also deferred their taxes to October. So as a result, our figures for the last fiscal year is still incomplete. And there's nothing we can do about that. We have to wait for people and corporations to submit their taxes. I mean, I don't know how to explain that to people easier than that. And we don't have and those number projections are supposed to give us a projection for the current fiscal cycle we're in. But again, given the phase open economy, we're not sure what that looks like. Unemployment's still floating in the 17% zone.
Yeah.
It's unclear. Unemployment benefits are taxed. Most people don't realize that. The unemployment plus your $600 you're getting is taxed. So, but we won't see that revenue really until next cycle anyway. And it's not a full salary. 60% of your salary there's a household cap component to it, plus against the state number, plus the silver bucks. So you won't see those benefits FY22.
Okay.
So it's still you know, nothing we're going to get today is the way to answer it.
Yeah.
It's such a moving target. It's very frustrating and difficult to try to explain in a manner that doesn't sound like I know what I'm saying, but I do know what I'm saying. I just, there's not an easy way to articulate the complexity of the situation.
Well, you don't have the full data, so you can't make it a presumption until you have all the data, right?
Yeah, the lack of information is hard.
Sure.
You're right, the lack of complete information. Like, and you can tell, you know, it fits here, it fits there.
Mm-hmm.
But without a full picture, it's been just very difficult to explain and try to anticipate.
Mm-hmm. We'll talk a little bit about the upcoming election and the mail-in process that'll be tried in addition to the absentee and the early voting, and whether or not you think that's going to be successful.
So I got my mail-in ballot, so that's still available for you to get. You have to August 12th, which I think has passed in registering to vote. I believe it's August 12th. As you can tell from the beginning of the show, the dates are leaving very quickly. But you know, on my on the city website, on the Secretary of State website, on my campaign website, my personal website, you know, we all put up a copy PDF of the form you can send back to Quincy City Hall to get a copy of mail-in ballot if that's what you want to do. I do anticipate it's going to be fairly successful. People want to be extremely cautious. A lot of polling places tend to be in schools. And we do not want to put anybody at risk. And those who vote know the average age of our poll workers is not young. Given the fact that the disease has a higher mortality rate as you get older on the scale, you know, the risk grows. So the poll workers, I hope, have a very quiet day because people have been mailing in their ballots.
And yep.
Used to risk to the city poll workers, the police officers, and translators, and others that are at the polls. But obviously, we should have polls open because people should have the opportunity to vote the same day. This is, you know, a foundation of the United States democracy. You know, election day, people should have the right to vote. But we should also have actually a means for people to vote, and mail-in ballots is one of them. So I did my form. It's just like an absentee ballot, no different. You said you don't have to provide any excuse. Mail it in. I got mine back within 7 days. It's just like a regular ballot, has the envelope that goes back to the city, has a barcode with my name on it, so they know this is one ballot, this is me. The clerk's office is available to answer questions, other people call me with questions, and they also call the clerk's office, so we just refer them to, and the clerk is able to answer the questions. And it's pretty straightforward.
Mm-hmm.
You just remember to fill out the envelope correctly. I think one of the things people would be challenged by if you never actually did absentee ballots, read carefully the instructions on how to fill out the envelope that the ballot goes back into, sign the right places, and then seal the envelope nice and tight, and then put it in the white envelope, which is the envelope you mail it back in, and seal that nice and tight, and then, you know, put it in the post. So I think I actually do think it's going to be fairly successful this year.
Yeah, it's not. It's new here in Massachusetts, but it's not new, right? It's been done in other states.
Mail-in ballots have been going on in other states for mm-hmm. quite some time. But it's not new here either because we've done absentee ballots all forever.
True.
And overseas ballots for the military. So it isn't like we haven't done bail ballots. We have. You've been ill, or you're going to take vacation on election day, or what? You got work-related problems, you got jury duty.
Mm-hmm.
You can get an absentee ballot. And so this is not a new phenomenon. What's new is the volume.
Right.
They have a huge volume of these ballots coming in by mail, as opposed to getting a small percentage of people unavailable. And you get the military ballots from overseas. People forget we've been doing military ballots for a long time. So people always act like, oh, this is new. It could be dangerous. Like, no. Every person, military personnel that's resident in Massachusetts that is not physically in Massachusetts have gotten a ballot. And it's not an absentee ballot. We just get them ballots.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it's kind of this thing that you look at folks like, this ain't new.
Yeah.
We've been doing this forever. It's just volume is different.
Are they being done, the mail-in ballots, are those also in multiple languages? I think it's three different languages here in Quincy.
No, Quincy only requires two languages under the Civil Rights Act. So it's just Chinese and English.
Okay.
The instructions on how to do this is Chinese and English. Flip the page over because the city has put on both sides of the paper. So mm-hmm. please turn the papers over if you don't see the language you need. And the absentee ballot envelopes also in two languages, one each side. So you need to read it in Chinese and just flip the envelope. So. Yeah, it's accommodated.
Okay. You'd mentioned the census a little earlier, Tacky. Here's a good opportunity to give us an update if you could.
Sure. We're doing better every week. I mean, it's been 10 days, and the last time I looked was last night. So nationally, we're at 63.5%, which is up from 62.8% from 10 days ago. Massachusetts is ahead of the curve, still at 65.7%. Up from 64.9%. So moving about 0.8% for the last 10 days. Quincy continues behind the state average, but ahead of the national average at 64.5. And again, it's moving steadily from 63.7. So again, we're moving in the right direction. We're over a percentage point-ish from last time. Our neighbors continue to be very strong. Braintree is sitting at 76.2%. Randolph at 66.9, Wilmington at 72.1, and Milton at 80.3. It's pretty incredible, 80.3.
Yeah.
Last cycle 10 years ago, last time they did census 10 years ago, Milton was at 75%. So they already smashed their number from 10 years ago.
A lot more people
to
respond to it.
Yeah, they're working to respond. The other community that did that is Weymouth. They're at 72.1, and now, they were 71.7 last time out, so they passed it number 10 years ago.
Mm.
So obviously a lot of local efforts in those communities are working, and you know we have to do our part to get our percentages up. 10 years ago, it was 68.1. As of yesterday, it was 64.5. Last year was, last 10 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
10 years ago, it was 68.1.
Yeah.
So we still have a ways to go just to meet our 2010 number.
Yeah,
and, we can do it. It's October 31st. The people knocking doors and making phone calls are now out there, social distancing and doing phone banking. Again, we'll never ask for money from you. We'll never ask for personal information that involves any identification that resulted in data breach, passcodes, PIN numbers, financial data, routing codes for your checking account and your and things like that. We never ask for information.
Sure.
So if someone does hang up, we'll close the door on them. But you know, we're out there now, you know, trying to get people help. It's 10 simple questions. They're very quickly down in line.
What, Tacky? What outstanding legislation is hanging in the balance when you get back into session?
In the near term, we do have some bills out there that are sitting in the conference committee. So we have a climate change bill that's sitting in conference committee. The House Senate has different ideas, but both of them are trying to get to some level of net zero carbon by 2050. We do have legislation on police reform, which has got a lot of news, and I'm steering about it, obviously, that is in conference committee. The House and Senate have two different versions of that bill. That is very two different bills. So I'm curious how they're going to even try to come to a compromise on two pieces of legislation that look nothing alike.
Hmm.
We do have a healthcare, a telemedicine in conference committee. Obviously, we're still using a video conference here. Telemedicine has been very successful under emergency regulations by the governor for codifying a lot of the practices and also addressing some issues like community health centers and other organizations that are technology challenged because of finances associated with telemedicine. So we're trying to figure out how to create ways of working with that. We have an economic bond bill in conference committee. Which is really a COVID economic bond bill.
Hmm.
That's really targeted on. This is not a conventional economic bond bill. So the bill, you know, creates things like sports betting in the house. You know, we look at the medical community in particular because it's a big economic driver for us. Some stuff on local main streets, how we're going to help them out. Again, restaurant recovery has been lingering in the Senate. Again, it makes an appearance in the economic bond bill. I'm sorry, the economic development bond bill. So, you know, things to address the restaurant industry, it's been a bit of a ping-pong match between the House and Senate, which I find increasingly frustrating. So we got some stuff sitting in conference committee. We got some smaller bills that we could move out in the House. For example, I had a conversation with the Speaker this week about some community bills that could be moved out, which should not be controversial. For example, beer distributors can only have one warehouse in Massachusetts to store the alcohol. So they're prohibited from having a second location, which they could more easily move stuff. Or if they have to build a new site, they would have to build a brand new site, then demolish the old site and sell it, as opposed to having two storage facilities or multiple small storage facilities open in the state. So as an example of what I consider a no-brainer bill, doesn't really adverse anyone. Doesn't change anything how things are done. It just gives them permission to have another storage location. So, you know, I'm trying to move some smaller, but what I consider groundbreaking, newsworthy legislation that's relevant. Like the veterinarians were trying to do a board update for them regarding their renew dates to have it synchronized better with all the other boards every 2 years on specific time frames as opposed to date of issuance. So there's a whole like adjustment period for moving to that new site. I mean, once again, not groundbreaking mm-hmm. legislation. And, you know, important to certain industries is to do technical corrections. So I had tried to speak to her this week about stuff like that to try to figure it out. It's another good one. Oh, yeah, debt collectors. Here's a good one. If you have debt and you want to collect your debt, you hire a debt collector. No one likes debt collectors. Big surprise. But that's what you do. The division of banks require you to do that. But if you buy my debt, let me phrase it this way. If you have debt that if I owe you money, Joe, this is a very fair way, and you sell my debt to Mike, Mike needs to collect from me by default, but Mike does not have to hire a debt collector.
Oh, okay. Does Mike
That's a problem.
Does Mike have to pay me for your debt?
Mike pays you for your debt. So if I owe you $100, and Mike and Mike says, I'll give you, you sell it to Mike for $75.
Okay.
Mike gives you $75. So you're out a bit of money, but now it's his problem. He hopes to get $100 back on a $75 investment.
Right.
But if I defaulted on you, you would hire a debt collector.
Yeah.
But if I default on Mike, because he bought the debt from you, he doesn't have to hire a debt collector. He can hire anybody he wants.
Oh, okay. Who would he hire, Tacky?
I call it the leg breaker situation. So that's what I call it, the leg breaker situation.
Gotcha.
So it becomes a bit of a problem because that would not be overseen by the Division of Banks.
Right.
So I have a complaint about a bad organization. Yeah, but that has nothing to do with the government. You know, if I have a complaint, I have nowhere to go.
I see.
Because the Division Bank would oversee it.
Interesting. Okay.
Supreme Court has already ruled this. The SJC ruled that the Division of Banks has no power under state law to address this issue. Hmm. So we're trying to pass a very, very simple bill to address this issue.
Hmm. Okay.
And then we have new things that popped up that we never realized. So there's a 3-day return period for cars. This issue regarding car temporary registrations with the RMV because of the way coronavirus is working, and we're trying to create some flexibility over protecting consumers but allowing car dealers to be able to work within that 3-day return policy. So it isn't an issue about the fact we shouldn't implement the policy. It's just that the way the RMV is set up now and getting plates out has not been timely as it normally would be because of how things are operating. We got to create some flexibility. Mm. You know, drive-in theaters are now back. Mm-hmm. The drive-in theaters and some big venues like my friends at the Kowloon in Saugus said they would convert the giant parking lot to a drive-in theater situation. So we're looking at seeing if we can do some accommodation for license 12, which is section 12 licenses, which are alcohol licenses for restaurants, to be able to serve alcohol outside. In people's vehicles when they're not moving, obviously.
Yeah, okay.
To enjoy a beverage while they're watching a film. It's a discussion issue. We filed a bill, but we can talk more about making some limits and things like that.
Yeah, I know Lantana and Randolph's doing the same thing in their parking lot.
Yeah, and they have a section 12 license. So you know, maybe you can enjoy a beer at the very onset of a movie that's 2.5 hours long. You know, if you have a meal with it, we got to iron this out, but it's an idea out there, because right now if we have approved outdoor seating for alcohol, but you're not in your car, you know, the winter's coming and all that. So I'm not sure how this will work, but it's an idea we're floating out there. I just don't know exactly how it'll operate. But we're going to float the idea out there and see what people think and you know, get feedback and see if that's a good idea or not.
Interesting, yeah.
So we filed a bill on expanding Chapter 93A, which is consumer protection law, to increase damages during a pandemic. So people are trying to defraud you during a state emergency of this length, you know, you would have greater recourse in district court filing complaints at consumer levels. So we're trying to increase penalties on that.
Mm-hmm.
I think good, because of the length of time involved. And the easier it is to scam folks right now for people who are that unscrupulous. So, you know, we've got that bill floating about. That's another one that we've got floating about. We're filing some new bills because session ended, so we have some time in August to go back to some old ideas.
Right, yes. What I did want to ask you, Tech, is your take on this. So we've seen the ads for the right to repair bill, you know, question one, which I wasn't even aware there was ballot questions. But I had thought that had passed years ago, actually.
You're absolutely correct.
Okay.
You're absolutely correct. It did pass. So this is also before my committee, which we allowed to go straight to ballot because we can't solve this in a short period of time regarding a lot of very technical issues. So under current law, right to repair law, no car repair shop can be denied the opportunity to buy the codes, the equipment, you know, from a car manufacturer to repair cars. So if you're a third-party shop and you want to get the codes and the computer and equipment, they have to sell it to you. And they have to give you equal access to that data, the same as dealer shops. And there's always accusations that the dealers are getting something they're not, because, you know, there's code 123 and then 789. But the assumption is something inside 456, which actually we discovered there is no 456 sometimes. The coding method is all numerical sequential, but the gaps do not reflect missing data. That's not always the case. It's just the way the system is coded. So unless you know, go to be trained at one of these locations, you know, this equipment can be a little confusing. Which also, yeah, they are not restricted from going to training sessions provided by manufacturers.
Okay.
This version is a little bit different. This has nothing to do with accessing equipment and data to repair your vehicle. This is about accessing all the data on your vehicle. So the advertising is mostly true on both sides. They do have one pertinent fact that's the same. Is the information generated by your car, who can get that information? And it's not car repair information, because current law already addresses car repair.
Okay.
This is beyond car repair. So this is information like your GPS, your radio station. The information is downloaded off your iPhone and Android phone onto the computer system. Your mileage, the average speed, OnStar. Perhaps your garage is connected to your car. The codes for your garage is connected to your car. Perhaps that's true. You know, sometimes your weight, depending on the vehicle. The
right.
Functionality with safety features. Every time the check light goes off, there's a recording.
Mm-hmm.
But also like your cruise control, that's all computerized. And your lane assistance and your danger zones, that's all recorded in your car. So as a result, who really should get that information that's been generated? As a consumer, you really don't need that information. You need to know when every time your lane assist goes off. I'd be surprised you need to know that much. But you know, your phone, when you connect to the car, goes into the car.
Yes.
So under the proposal, it gives basically anybody, in particular repair shop, full access to all that data to do what they want with it.
Okay.
Currently, the only people who can access that data is the car manufacturers themselves. And you actually have to bring it to the car manufacturer.
I see.
Dealership can only access the repair data. They have no interest in the rest of the stuff.
Okay.
Doesn't mean it can't be hacked. It is involved. No. That being said, there's one more part. Both of them are correctable, but both of them we're not talking about. Here's the cloud data. So every card now has the ability to transmit your data to the manufacturer on an incremental basis. So those are your GPS features that download the maps. Well, how's that happening? Well, it's a type of cellular signal.
Hmm.
Well, what if my car has no ability to do GPS? They still have a small cellular signal. So when there's a chance to hook up to a tower, they'll transmit the data back to the manufacturer, your VIN number, and to keep a database on all your vehicles.
Hmm.
As a result, I don't know if anyone's noticed that your recall information is happening before any views of a car breaking down. There is, you get that recall notice on something as simple as a need to replacement cap, because the computer system detected that there's a leak because of this cap.
Hmm.
The manufacturer knows because that data has been sent up there via the cloud all the way to wherever it is, and the computer system flags, oh my God, we have X number of vehicles with this same signal warning problem. We better do something about this before a lawsuit happens.
I see.
Hence, massive recall on cars regarding a part. Normally, in the past, if people remember the old days, when your car had enough accidents and people started dying,
yes,
suddenly there's a recall issue. Nobody dies today, really, from a recall issue. Airbags were a problem, but that was a third-party manufactured airbags.
Mm-hmm.
And the Toyota had a weird issue regarding the gas pedal, which their computer systems, based on the data logs, couldn't quite figure out what was really going on. They were still trying to figure out if it was human error or floor mat error, but the data provided up into the cloud, and as well as Dynastic on site, was having a very hard time trying to figure out what was wrong with those gas pedals. But you know, you don't hear very often anymore about a car accident or numerous car accidents before a recall is required.
Yeah.
This is done early because of your personal information sent to the cloud. The repair shops are very concerned that this information in the cloud would inhibit the ability to repair cars by getting the codes. So their solution is that, well, we want access to all the data all the time. So that information should be transmitted to the car manufacturer. So think about your third party repair shop. Imagine having all that data sent to your third party repair shop all the time, including your GPS data, your phone contact list, all that stuff in their hands on a regular basis.
Yeah. Okay.
So the advertising is sort of true, sort of not true,
right.
But they are true in one way, is the fact that both are correct. It gives somebody that's not you and not the manufacturer, the dealer, the third-party manufacturer, your insurance company, AAA, anybody, the ability to access your car via data information. It isn't their information.
Okay, that's good to clarify that, because I think there's some confusion about that. And like I had said, you know, I thought that had already passed. It turns out it did.
No, actually, it did. If a third-party repair shop wants to, again, get the equipment and the training and and computer systems, the manufacturers have to do it. Give it to them.
Which is a significant investment for them, certainly. It certainly is, yeah.
No, absolutely.
But, yeah.
Business.
We're recording this on August 14th, Techie, 2 days before the virtual August Moon Festival this year. Will you be participating?
I did my pre-recorded message on Monday and sent that in. I understand QETV is doing social distancing appearances.
Yes.
In the studios. So physical guest appearances, I think, could be extremely limited at the studio. It's 11 a.m. on Sunday, so it goes on for a few hours. It's going to be broadcast on QETV, I believe.
Absolutely. While
streaming on the internet and be streamed and re-shown multiple times.
Yes.
It'll be a truncated activity. And again, I think everyone knows that the local service organizations are having serious fundraising problems this year because you can't have large gatherings. A mailing campaign is expensive. So a lot of people are trying to do online donation requests. I'm sure you guys can put together some clips from various local service agencies that, you know, can tell them what's going on and help raise them a couple bucks. But know, those of us out there that, you know, have a couple of dollars to spend, if you're able to donate locally, that would be very, very helpful. I know a lot of folks have donated to Feeding America and other large organizations, but it takes time for those resources to trickle down to our level. You know, if you can make a local donation, whether online or by check or, you know, any means, it doesn't matter how much, for, you know, appreciated resources, fuel cap, social services, you know, the community health centers, Man and South Cove, your church, our neighborhood center, the Y, you know, any organization locally, that money coming from us directly to them, it removes the intermediary.
Right. Yeah, there's much less overhead. A lot more of your donation goes right to the social service providers.
Oh, absolutely. So if people have the ability to do so, you know, definitely please consider, you know, either buying a raffle ticket or making a direct donation, or, you know, whatever you're comfortable with.
Mm-hmm.
Right now, they need the money.
Yes.
It's really that simple.
Yeah. Anything else we should touch on today, Techie?
Well, we have some cooler weather this weekend.
Yes.
So, you know, hope people, you know, able to enjoy the weather. And, you know, associate that, again, it's up to us to try to keep this virus in control. Places like New Zealand, which basically closed the entire islands of the world, has now had 5 new cases, all locally transmitted. So even though they had no cases for a long time and they isolated themselves, again, it's asymptomatic. People are probably carrying disease, didn't know it. Somebody else got symptoms, they started testing through bad symptoms and realized that it didn't go away. It just moved from person to person that wasn't showing symptoms. So a lot of other countries that have done a great job on trying to keep it under control, expense of their economy, huge expense of their economy, has now seen localized transmission. And again, these people start shutting things down with less than 100 cases. We're at 300 one day this week, and, you know, we just slowed down phase three. My cousins live in Victoria County, a province, Melbourne, Australia. We check in with them, so they're doing, but it's the biggest hotspot in Australia. Out of control. Again, I think they had it under control for 2 weeks. Hong Kong had actually closed the restaurant. And they had to reopen on a partial basis because of the unintended consequences of shifting people from indoors onto the street to eat. So they had different crowding problems in a very dense city. So they're all trying to adjust. Less than 100 cases. We shut down the nightclubs, the bars right away because the speed of control gets in the area. So, you know, people hopefully understand the insidious nature of this disease to be able to just why they hide in the person perfectly healthy and then, you know, give it to somebody else. Hence, wear your mask. And please keep your germs to yourself.
Yes, don't share your air is the billboard I saw the other day. I thought it was pretty appropriate, yeah.
Well, I never wanted your air to begin with, so this just helps more.
How do folks reach out to you, Tacky, for comments or questions?
Well, please call the office at 617-722-2014, 617-722-2014. We still find it's the most efficient way for us to hear from you. It really is. You can email at Tacky, T-A-C-K-E-Y, .chan@mahouse.gov, so tacky.chan@mahouse.gov. At the end of the month, I was averaging approximately 500 emails a day, which sifting through it is hard. So as you can imagine, why we like phone calls. So at least we can sit through voicemails and write down the phone numbers and what you're asking about versus me trying to literally read every single one and resort, reassign to staff.
Yeah.
And then obviously we have our Facebook site, Tacky Chan, State Representative Tacky Chan on Facebook. We've been putting up the bonus art information, consumer information, relevant phone numbers, links to useful sites. But please don't use social media to contact me for a real life concern. Again, it's a sifting issue. Trying to get to the comment you made deep into the posts doesn't help me, but I help you. And of course, we have tackychan.org, which is the government, it's my website, but it's the official government website because the state website doesn't give us any flexibility on how to use it.
Right.
But we also put coronavirus information up there in particular, that if you don't feel like sifting through Facebook, you can find some information there as well as the human service agencies. So those resources that you may look at that may help you quicker than trying to find me sometimes.
Okay. Sounds good. Appreciate your time as always. Great to talk to you.
Great to talk to you. Have a good weekend, and we'll talk again soon.
All right. Thanks, Tacky.